Good morning and welcome to Sports Viewer Review with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLAW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLAW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Well, this morning, we will get to know one of the most prolific golf course architects in history, world-renowned Seth Rayner. Now, this story is even more special because Seth Rayner was born in Manorville in 1874 and lived and worked right here in Southampton. I love his history. He was hired to survey land for Charles Blair MacDonald, a pioneering figure often considered the father of American golf architecture. Together, they worked on the National Golf Links of America, which opened in 1911 and was inspired by the great holes of Scotland and England. His designs were known for their bold features, the squared-off greens, deep bunkering, dramatic contouring, and the use of template holes, the Redan hole, the Baritz, Eden, and Alps. And between 1914 and Seth Rayner's untimely death in 1926, he designed or helped design over 100 courses. His collection of work is just incredible, including several right here in our own backyard: Southampton Golf Club, West Hampton Country Club, Fisher's Island, Brookville Country Club, before that collaborating with Charles Blair MacDonald, the Creek Club, North Shore Country Club, Piping Rock, to name a few, St. Louis Country Club, Greenbrier, Old White, Sleepy Hollow Country Club, the Mid-Ocean Club in Bermuda. I'm sure some of these courses ring a bell, right? His solo work also included the Everglades Club and Mountain Lake Country Club in Florida, the Country Club of Fairfield in Connecticut, the Chicago Golf Club, Morris County Golf Club, and Essex County Country Club in New Jersey, Yeoman's Hall in South Carolina, to name a few. Well, all of Seth Rayner's work is captured in a beautiful book called The Golf Courses of Seth Rayner. It was written by Michael Wolfe and James Sitar and photographed by John Cavalier. Mike Kaiser wrote the foreword. The book was published by Back Nine Press. This morning, you will hear my conversation with Michael Wolfe and hopefully get to know a bit more about the genius of Seth Rayner. I mean, his golf course designs and builds are equal parts art and science. According to the cover flap of this book, it writes, "A trained civil engineer who rarely played golf and who began his golf course architect career in his late 30s, Rayner used his unique genius to create some of the most memorable holes in the United States. Now considered one of the most gifted and popular of the Golden Age architects, his design principles have continued to inspire and influence course architects today. And I'm a proud member of one of Seth Rayner's gems, Southampton Golf Club. And what a year we have had at Southampton. We celebrated our centennial anniversary this year, and we are recognized by the Met Golf Writers Association at their annual National Awards Dinner. Club of the Year. How incredible was that? It's such an honor to be a member at Southampton Golf Club, and I love playing the template holes, the Seth Rayner template holes that are so much a part of Southampton Golf Club. You know, they have the Short, the Maiden, the Knoll, the Rayner's Prize, Rodan Hole, the Double Plateau, the Eden, the Long, the Baritz, the Punch Bowl, the Road. And I love the fact that the terrain on the front nine of Southampton Golf Club varies greatly from that on the back nine, offering members such a diverse and challenging experience and a very fun experience as well. Seth Rayner designs are fun. They're challenging, but they're so much fun to play. Congratulations to Southampton Golf Club for being awarded Club of the Year by the Met Golf Writers Association, and for such a wonderful centennial celebration this year. I hope you enjoy this edition of Sports Interview. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. And I've always been a fan of golf course architect Seth Rayner, who in a relatively short period of time from 1914 to his untimely death at the young age of 51 in 1926, designed over 100 courses. Just incredible. And I'm fortunate to be a member of a Seth Rayner design Southampton Golf Club right here in Southampton, New York. And what a gem that is. And so many of his designs on Long Island alone and within the New York metropolitan area. And here to talk about it is Michael Wolff. He and Jim Sitar wrote just a gorgeous book called The Golf Courses of Seth Rayner. And the photographs are by John Cavalier. And first of all, Michael, I love this book. Congratulations on this just extraordinary effort.
Thank you very much. It was, I enjoyed doing it. That was something I always thought about doing. And it was, I enjoyed the process. It was fun. And I learned a lot.
How did you originally get drawn to the work of Seth Rayner?
So I grew up, like a lot of people getting their start in golf. I grew up as a caddy in Cincinnati, Ohio. Oh. At an old Langford and Moreau golf course on the west side of town. But every once in a while, the real fancy club on the other side of town, Camargo, when they would have a big tournament and they would need some extra caddies, they would call over and I would quickly raise my hand and volunteer to go over. First of all, because the pay was better over there, but also it was just a special place. It was like going to another world. Everything was just so green and manicured. And, it took me a couple of times, but, you know, as I was playing more golf in this, I was 12, 13, 14 years old. It became obvious almost right away that, I'd never seen any golf courses like that, you know, whether it was the kind of squared off greens or just some of the hole designs and the bunkering. And I thought, you know, this is, you know, interesting and different than everything else I've seen. It kind of got in my head at an early age. And then, I'm a big reader. I collect golf books. I enjoy reading books. I have since I was a little kid. And my area of focus has always been on golf history, golf architecture, the men who built the courses. As anybody who's ever seen me swing a golf club knows, I'm not so much on like instruction books or biographies and things like that. I like to read about, you know, how the men and women who built these places and what was behind it. And so that was kind of the start of it. Specifically on Seth Rayner, and what led to the book was I've got probably about 3,000 golf books I'm up to now. I hope my wife's not listening, on different golf courses and different golf course architects. And the one spot missing on the shelf, as I write in the introduction, was always Seth Rayner. Just about every golf course architect, particularly the golden age ones, they would write books, or in a lot of cases, they were almost just like pamphlets on kind of their philosophies on golf course architecture. And in most cases, it was almost like a sales brochure. You know, they were doing it so that they could give out these copies to people. And it was a way of kind of advertising and trying to separate themselves. For Seth Rayner, he didn't need to. He was in an extremely unique position in the long history of golf course architects, which is he was busy from the day he got in the business. So, you know, from kind of starting as, C.B. McDonald's protege at the National Golf Links of America. And that was, you know, well received from the moment it opened once they got the agronomy issues figured out. And it led to, you know, National Golf Links, as you can tell by the title, was kind of a national club with people spending the summers in Southampton, pretty nice places, you know, to hang out in the summertime. And guys would come from St. Louis and from Cincinnati and from New Orleans to, you know, up to Southampton to hang out for the summers. And after they had gotten a chance to see this new national that everybody was raving about, the next question was, well, I want one for St. Louis and I want one for Cincinnati. And Stephen McDonald was a Wall Street guy. He's hanging around with JP Morgan and the Vanderbilts and those types of folks. And he said, I don't have time to be, doing this all over the world, but I can send my man, Seth Rayner, from, a surveyor and engineer from Southampton, Long Island, and he knows what to do. And so Rayner, really, from the day he got into the business, he was busy, and essentially almost, hate to say it, but probably worked himself to death, or at least didn't take care of himself as well as he should have. And so for that reason, he didn't leave much behind other than his work. I mean, he didn't write any books. He didn't do very many interviews at all. No one's discovered any, journals that he kept or anything like that. And so, getting back to your question, why, Seth Rayner and what caught my attention, it was really because of the juxtaposition. With the courses are so visually striking and so interesting, but there was so little known about the man and his process and stuff. Everybody, many of your listeners have probably heard he never played golf in his life. Just by chance, the first golf course he ever saw was Shinnecock Hills. When he was a
Unbelievable.
17-year-old, he helped his father do a site survey for that golf course. And then along comes Steve McDonald, who helps ask him to help move some dirt and figure out the drainage issues at what will become National Golf Links of America. And then, he was off and running for the next 15 years on just this, wild ride. And somewhere along the line, unfortunately, he forgot to write down all of his secrets. So,
So I'm interested in how you uncovered all of that. First of all, going back, I was born in Cincinnati, raised outside of Cleveland in a town called Bruck. So I'm going to have to get back to Cincinnati and try to get on one of that, his Seth Rayner design Camargo, as you expressed. But I've lived on the east end of Long Island since the 90s. And Seth Rayner was born in Manorville, not far away from where I am right now, and lived and worked right in Southampton, as you mentioned. And throughout his Charles Blair McDonald hired him to build National Golf Links, and he knew nothing about golf. What an interesting scenario, Michael.
In retrospect, it was kind of a dream team. Stephen McDonald knew plenty about golf, and he was not shy about telling you that he knew a lot about golf. Some folks in Yonkers, New York, or in Charleston, South Carolina, or Chicago may disagree. Would have disagreed at the time, but he kind of fancied himself the keeper of the flame, right? Charles Blair McDonald literally learned to play golf from old Tom Morris. He was sent over there because his grandfather was a professor at the University of St. Andrews, and he went over there for, as a 16-year-old. Most of Chicago had just burned down with the Great Fire. And so as a 16-year-old, they sent him over to St. Andrews to study and kind of get some seasoning in another part of the world. And literally on his second day in town, he went his grandfather took him down to old Tom Morris's golf shop and bought him his first set of clubs. And so McDonald really learned the game, at its base, and he was fiercely protective of that. When it came to the United States, he felt like he knew better than anyone, and he wasn't shy about telling people how things should go, whether it was the rules or how competition should be run. And then, later on, as he became wealthier and moved from Chicago to New York, he had this dream that was at least partially spurred on by a magazine article he read, that was asking the readers to submit, their examples of what they think are the best golf holes in the world. And so you had this very outgoing, sure-footed guy who's also a great golfer. Charles Blair McDonald won, U.S. Amateur, the first one held under the USGA's authority. And then partnering with him is this, I think shy is probably too strong a word, but introverted man who was a hard worker, who was polite, who was earnest, and who was clearly a good listener and was able to get along with a wide variety of people. Golf course architecture, all of us that are AMs, right? We like to, whether it's in the grill room or at night, or we're watching golf on television or whatever. And most of us think that it's, the fun part, obviously, is getting out the graph paper and drawing, trying to figure out, a new hole design or something. The reality is building a golf course is just backbreaking blue collar work. And so Seth Rayner was the perfect partner for Stephen McDonald in that he was able to bridge the gap between, these really the wealthiest titans of American industry, right? Herbert Walker, George Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush's grandfather and great grandfather, for St. Louis Country Club and just all over all the places that he, Stephen McDonald sent him, and he's able to bridge the gap between these ultra wealthy people who knew what they wanted and knew what they expected, but at the same time, it's not like today where Tom Doak's got a crew and Gil Hansen's got a crew. Part of being a good golf architect back then was being able to teach the people in a very relatively short period of time, teach the laborers who many of themselves have never seen a golf course, how to do it. Whether it's how to carry out your instructions on how to shape a green properly, or it's the proper construction of a sand bunker so that it doesn't all wash out every time it rains. And we forget that unlike now with Instagram and with airplanes and modern travel and stuff, many of the courses that Seth Rayner built, Alistair McKenzie built, Harry Colt, whoever, they never actually saw them as golf courses. They were there for 2 or 3 weeks. They did the routing and they maybe taught the local crew of just blue collar laborers, day laborers, how to build one bunker and how to lay out a green, and then maybe they came back a year later to see how it turned out, and maybe not. But Rayner was able to kind of bridge those two worlds of the guys with the work boots on and the guys in the boardroom who were paying for it all. And he was a good bridge for that. He was a very talented guy for that. Unfortunately, a modest enough man, like I say, that he didn't feel the need to kind of publicize his work or his stuff. And but to be honest, that's also part of the fun of researching it, writing the book is kind of the hunt is kind of fun too, to
Well,
try to figure it out.
exactly. I mean, you mentioned he did not leave his own writing or any personal reflections. So, how did you fill in that gap as far as the historical records?
Yeah, so I stand on the shoulders of a lot of great men and women, that's for sure. I mean, right over in New Jersey, at the USGA's headquarters, you've got a great library staff there, and they've got the world's largest collection of golf books and research materials. And the ladies that work in the library, Hillary Cronheim and Stacy Schiff, very patient and knowledgeable and helpful. And help you look up things and answer questions and maybe point you in the right direction. There's also, in the last 20 years, there's been a real resurgence, I think, in golf course architecture at large, but specifically with Steve McDonald and then with Seth Rayner. And so there's been more, on the internet and things like that. I mean, trying to write this book 30 years ago would have been impossible without newspapers.com and the web and things like that. And then last but not least is just a lot of dedicated club historians and outgoing club presidents that have spent 30 or 40 years of their life at a Metairie Country Club or at a Southampton, and took the time to do a club history of their own and did the local research and probably of the there's depending on how you count, there's about 40 Seth Rayner golf courses left, and probably about 35 out of the 40 have got club histories that have been published within the last 20, 30 years, and tracking down copies of those and almost like a book report of what their findings are and seeing how it kind of ties to the other information that I've learned, and then trying to build kind of timelines of where he was when and who he was traveling with and things like that to kind of fill in some of the gaps. So
Sure.
it
I
was.
know Southampton, we just celebrated our centennial anniversary this year, and a book will be coming out next year on Southampton. So we'll have to get you a copy of that, Michael.
I'm already standing in line. Yeah, you've got a great team up there of Rainerites, and I'm looking forward to the book because I know some of the guys involved with it, and they do great work and research. I've met some of them at the Seth Rainer Society events, and
Oh, nice.
yeah, I'm sure it'll
Yeah.
be good. It's a
And I don't know if you know, but Southampton, we just got voted Club of the Year by the Met Golf Writers Association at our national awards dinner
wow.
in October. So,
That's yeah, and
very thrilled
that's
for
a tough
that.
neighborhood. That's not like winning that award in Birmingham, Alabama, or someplace. That's high cotton up there, as we say. That's a lot of
Yeah.
competition there.
Yeah, we were very
Southampton, I
honored.
mean, just as one example, Southampton would be the best golf course in Alabama by far. I mean, it'd be the best golf course in Louisiana. It'd be like the best course in Mississippi. Rayner's career was so brief. And kind of like McKenzie, where, he was only in the United States, you just, the timing had to be right where, there were certain regions of the country where the economy was great and the money was there and the interest was there and the right person was, happened to live nearby or was passing through at the right time. And, Long Island was definitely one of the beneficiaries of that.
Oh my
I
gosh,
play
when you
there.
look down the list here, Joseph Seth Rainer's solo designs on the island, West Hampton Country Club, North Shore Country Club. I played Mountain Lake Country Club down in Lake Wales, Florida. We'll talk about that in a second. Brookfield Country Club. Let's see, Essex County Country Club, that's in New Jersey. Going down Southampton, of course. Fisher's Island, which is, off the coast, nearby, somewhat reachable by boat. I've played there a few times. And then just in New York overall, I mean, with Sleepy Hollow, the collaboration at Sleepy Hollow, Piping Rock on Long Island, the Creek on Long Island. I mean, it's so rich in Seth Rainer designs or co-designs, and such, this area is so rich in golf history. Talk a little bit, Michael, about Seth Rainer designs, the template holes, what he is most renowned for.
So it really began with C.B. McDonald. He as I say, he had re he had grown up and did well in Chicago and moved to New York and to the Big Apple. And if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. And he did. I mean, he was running around with in the Roaring Twenties when wasn't much of a better place to be than in Manhattan. And he was part of that crowd. I mean, the membership roster of National Golf Links of America is like a is like reading the brand names for Fortune 500 companies. I mean, it's just one, whether it's Sears or Pfizer or whoever, Merck. So he knew what he knew that he had this dream of building a golf course, and finally the time was right in his personal life and financially and his circle of friends he knew would support it. So he went, and made trips to he made trip to France, he made trips to England, he made trips to Scotland, and these were really scouting them. And according to contemporary reports, he took surveys and measurements of the slopes of the greens, and he would find a green that he liked or had been recommended to him, and he would try to identify. And it's important for people to know, and we kind of go through this in the book. It's He didn't build copies of holes. This wasn't like some place down, some tourist place down in Myrtle Beach where it's, you can play and they've got a replica of the Spoken Bridge and they've got a replica of the 12th hole at Augusta National. What he was trying to figure out is why these holes were so good. And then when he brought that back and what he taught Seth Rainer was kind of the philosophies of the strategy of the holes and why, what features made them good. And Rainer obviously was a quick study because what he learned pretty quickly is, to there were certain, hole designs or certain features, like you say, we call them templates today. Neither Rainer or McDonald ever used the word template, but they learned how to apply them to different, whether it was different agronomy, different topography. And that's to me what's fun. And that's what I think is, I think anybody would enjoy the book if they have the faintest interest in this kind of stuff, because especially with the achievements and advances in modern drone photography and just private clubs being much less wary about letting some guy like me through their gates to have a look around. We're finally able to see these things and see them from different angles and different times of day and things like that. And part of the fun with Seth Rainer is you've played maybe one when you were growing up, like I say, or you got the caddy at one, or you played in a tournament at one, or you got invited to a member guest at one, and maybe you played a second one. But as you play the third one or the fourth one, it's fun to see different holes that you remember from different Seth Rainer courses and how he applied them to that particular site or that particular topography. You've got Metairie Country Club down in Louisiana. There can't be 3 feet of elevation change. It's flat as a pancake. I mean, dead flat. And so, there he used this, he kind of dialed up the severity of the greens and the slopes and things. And that was kind of the defense because the rest of it was just kind of a big, essentially just a playground. Whereas you've got Fisher's Island that's, up and down those hills and trying to, figure out which holes worked best, with some of those greens hanging literally right off the, sides of the beach there. And how to fit the yardages in and how to make them all work. And that really seemed to me to be Rayner's genius was, you know, taking the few things that he knew that he had learned from Steve McDonald. And he doesn't appear to ever really have strayed away from that. He thought this is good. This guy knows what he's doing. I'm busy and the formula is working. But at the same time, he, you know, he never got lazy where he just, you know, pulled a map up off the wall and thought, well, this one worked in New York. Let's try it in, you know, let's try it in Minnesota. He took the time to make every routing and really figure out how to use the holes in the best combinations and different features on different holes. You know, on some holes, like at you know, like at Fisher's Island, they're, you know, one of their great holes is the Alps hole with the fish with the, you know, which means there's a large mound in between you and the green that you have to hit over, and it's a completely blind shot. And then there's this punch bowl, you know, behind it that kind of helps funnel everything down towards the middle. And it's fun because if you're playing with four people and you're having a little game and everybody hits it over the hill, and then there's this fun moment where everybody's climbing the hill in anticipation.
Right.
And you see, you know, one ball laying right next to the hole and three balls laying 20 feet away. And then it's even funner as you walk down close and you try to figure out whose ball is whose because you don't know, you know, which slope they took because it was a blind shot. There's other places where he used a punch bowl green, you know, on a par three course or on a par three hole or on a par five. You know, he used some of the different strategies in different combinations to make each one of his courses unique. And John Cavalier, who runs Lynx Gems on social media and is a pretty well-known golf photographer. John was our partner on this. And, you know, he takes, I think, just beautiful pictures, but also really unique angles that, you know, you don't see when you're playing. And it really helps kind of show off what makes, you know, each one unique. And that's kind of how we approached the book was.
Right. I mean, John said it was the most fun photographing Seth Rayner designs because they're just fun holes. They're as you said, the punch bowl, every punch bowl is somewhat similar to all these, but so a little different, as you say, right? I know it's Southampton, it's 16, and there's a huge mound in front of the green, and you can't, basically, you can't see the landing area, right? And you go for, they have a little target, you know, thing behind the green. So you kind of aim for that. And it's just so much fun. Where is the ball going to land? You don't know until you kind of have a view of it. So
he was able
the
to,
photographer was able to really capture the essence of those holes.
He was. And, you know, Rayner was clever enough to make each one of his courses feel unique, even though essentially there were about 22 different, you know, today we call them templates or concepts that he would use in different combinations. But all the courses are fun. They're also all, you know, most of them are very walkable, except for some of the more extreme sites where there just wasn't an easy answer to solve an issue. And at most places you could play them, you know, you could play golf there 7 days in a row with one sleeve of balls. You know, there's just, it was not a penal type of situation. You know, risk reward, you know, it was, if you want to try to carry a bunker or if you want to try to take a shortcut over a dog leg and you are successful, you're going to be paid off for it. But if you're a beginner golfer or if you're a 10-year-old who's just learning how to play and you're out there with, you know, your dad getting to play the big course, you could hit seven irons, 130 yards, you know, as long as you're hitting them straight and never lose a ball and have a great time. Because as you said, the challenges that he presents are pretty easy to understand. You know, they're pretty easy visually to grasp. You know, when you're playing a Redan hole or you're playing a Biarritz, you can walk up to it, even if it's the first Seth Rayner golf course you've ever played. It's pretty easy to catch on what challenge is put ahead of you and what your options are. And those are usually pretty easy to grasp.
And that first Biarritz hole in the United States was built at Piping Rock back in 1911. And
right.
I understand that Charles Blair McDonald actually perhaps named it after a hole he saw in the south of France, or?
Yes, a little bit of controversy in that one. So Biarritz, France is, it's kind of like the Southampton of France. It's where everybody goes in the summer to escape the heat, and especially in the days before, you know, before highways and before air conditioning and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a well-known resort for, you know, going back over 100 years. And there was, again, there's different versions of the story, but there was a relatively famous hole there that was almost, if you can kind of picture the 16th at Cypress Point, it was called the Chasm Hole. And if anybody's ever lucky enough to be invited to the Lynx Club in downtown New York City, which was kind of Stephen McDonald's in-town club. It's like Golf Clubhouse, but
Right,
it's
that's
on
a
the Upper East
cool
Side. And
spot for sure.
yeah, there's a painting of the Chasm Hole. I think the most commonly accepted feeling today is that he got the idea for kind of the long force carry from the Chasm Hole, but then there was another hole or another green site, probably down on the beach, below the cliff down there, where he kind of got the idea for the swale. Also important to note, for the real aficionados, they already know this, but so the Biarritz holes, they were always it was never intended that there was green in front. So right now, they can put the pin in front of the swale or behind the swale. In the original versions of almost all the holes, we think every one of the holes, the front was not cut to green height. So the pin was always back, and you always had to run the ball through the swale and the green.
Right. That
The
number
pin was kind of
14
an
Biarritz hole at Southampton is tricky. And
yeah.
it's so much fun because the hole takes on so many different options depending on where they put the pin. And then the maiden, number three at Southampton, the blind tee shot, you have two pronounced plateaus on the green. Talk a little bit about the maiden template.
Yeah, so that's so I think so in the book, to kind of explain it to folks new to it, or if you've only played one, or maybe you're excited because you've got an invite to play one coming up, and you want to learn a little bit about it before you go. In each chapter of the book, or as I preview courses, I pick a different example of what I think is, a notable example of each one of the 22 different what we call what today we call template holes.
Sure.
In point them out. And so for Southampton, I chose the maiden hole. I think the maiden is I think the Southampton's version of the maiden is right up there with anybody's.
Classic.
Maidens were usually one of the harder holes on the golf course. They were typically not always. There are very few firm and set in stone rules with McDonald or Rayner, because like I say, they try to keep an open mind and adapt to what they found when they arrived at a new web. They didn't try to impose a golf course, before they saw the land. They walked the land and saw what was available and how the different pieces might fit together like a puzzle when they were doing the routing. But typically, in most cases, maiden holes were longer par fours. As you say, it's they have a lot in common with the double plateau green, which is one where there's it's almost like an L shape, and two of the sides are either much higher than the middle or much lower than the middle. So it's almost like it's three different greens. The maiden hole, typically there's a back right shelf and a back left shelf, as you say, and then kind of a little trench running through the middle. I like the one at Southampton because you got that little bunker. If it runs all the way through the back of it, and on longer par fours, a lot of times you're coming in with a 4 iron or a 5 iron or whatever, and if you catch it a little thin, or if you just don't have your distance right, or you're one reason or another, it's easy to run a ball through there. And I like how that little bunker at Southampton kind of collects everything. But yeah, I'd say the maiden, generally speaking, is one of the harder holes at a lot of the Seth Rand golf courses. The maiden is
Yeah,
one of the
the
tougher
green
ones.
complexes are just,
Yeah. They're
it's
fun.
beautiful. They're fun, but
They're
they're
fun.
tough, very, very tough. And then, of course, the Rodin holes, just classic design. And at Southampton, it's number seven. You have that huge right to left slope on the green. Just so much fun. You have to place that tee shot perfectly to get that roll right there near to the hole, right? It's just a brilliant, brilliant template hole.
Yeah, they learned, they knew back then what we've forgotten too often in modern golf, which is one of the fun parts about golf is watching the ball rolling on the ground. I mean, it's exciting when you hit a good shot on a, whether it's on a maiden hole or on a Biarritz or wherever, and the ball disappears for a second and you're wondering, is it going to come through? Or when you have to hit a ball over a hill and you're playing a match against somebody and you go up there and there's only one ball on the green and there's one ball in the bunker, and when you're walking up, you're hoping it's his ball in the bunker and your ball, on the green. And he's thinking the opposite. That excitement and that suspended moment when you're waiting. And I think a lot of that somewhere along the line, unfortunately, kind of got lost with, as courses got built more for, real estate sales and things like that, and which presented drainage issues and runoff issues, and that led to more water hazards. And I could go on and on, but there's not much fun about hitting a ball in a lake, and it just being gone. And then you got to reach in your bag and get another ball. And if you got to do that four or five times, That's a pretty easy way to turn people off of golf. Everybody likes watching your ball as it rolls closer and closer to the hole, and you're hoping it'll stop rolling as it, as it gets near, as near to the hole as you can. That's a fun thing. Or as the ball takes a slope, I'm a double digit handicap these days, but it, so I can't do it 10 times around, but even just once or twice, it's fun. And I think it's something for beginners too. I personally think that a lot of Seth Rayner and Stephen McDonald golf courses are fun places to play as a
They are
beginner.
so much fun. And
Yeah,
some of the
because it's
most
fun.
memorable moments are when I birdied that Rodin hole at Southampton just recently. I mean, just to place it perfectly on that slope and see it trickle down close to the hole. Can you imagine getting a hole in one on that hole? That'd be classic. We're talking to Michael Wolff, the author of The Golf Courses of Seth Rayner. We're going to take a quick break and come back. I have a couple more questions I want to ask you, Michael, so stay where you are. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and we continue with my conversation with Michael Wolff, who, along with Jim Sitar, wrote The Golf Courses of Seth Rayner. And boy, learning so much about Seth Rayner and your passion for this renowned golf course architect. And we are talking about his template holes. Which Rayner hole, if any, would you say best describes his genius of all those template holes that we previously talked about?
Yeah, I like a good Alps hole. They're typically, not the longest hole. They're usually, a little bit shorter. They're quirky. They'll often have kind of a, not just a blind shot for the approach to the green, but a blind shot with a bunker hidden on the other side of the hill. So not only do you have to clear the, clear the hill, or whatever's in front of you, a mound that they built or whatever, but a lot of times there's a hazard on the back side of that, on the side that you can't even see, the downslope, I guess you'd say, and then the punchbowl green. They're fun. They typically, one of the tricks that Rayner learned from McDonald, and McDonald was said to have, it's one of the first locations he identified for a hole at when he was laying out National Golf Links America. They typically build them uphill, because it kind of helps with that, with the challenge of the second shot. It's if you're playing an Alps that was downhill, you'd be able to see over the hazard in front of the green. Whereas this one, by going uphill, it kind of exacerbates that. They don't have to move as much dirt that way, and they can kind of tuck it in, into a corner of the property or whatever, and
And
behind a
wasn't it
little.
originally modeled after the Alps hole at Prestwick, which
It
is
was,
such
yep.
a just a whimsical golf course? I love that golf course. I played Prestwick in Scotland a number of years ago, and oh my gosh, but that was obviously the inspiration for McDonald.
It was. And we're, I think, one of the funny things about the, if somebody built one of those, if some, if they hadn't done it and somebody created the Alps hole today on some course in, Florida or in Kentucky somewhere, people would hate it. They'd be like, this is a crazy hole. You can't see where you're going. It's, you can't tell when the people in front of you are getting off the green, whatever. But the fact that it has its roots at Prestwick, and then it was picked up by Stephen McDonald and brought over here and, recreated at, just wonderful places like Fisher's Island and Southampton and all over the place. For some reason, we as golfers, like, that's got our seal of approval. As long as those guys said it was okay, then it must be okay.
Exactly.
Whereas,
Well, Prestwick, my God, anything
yeah.
at Prestwick, is just incredible.
Yeah.
But also, what would be your top three Rayner designs that you would recommend to Rayner enthusiasts?
Getting on
That's
them
a
is the
tough one.
hard part. I mean, so Fisher's Island, obviously,
Ah,
there aren't many better
incredible.
places. For those that don't know, as you reference, it's this tiny island that's out in the coast of Connecticut, and that's kind of part of the charm, is you take a little, whaler out there, and there's, I don't know, a couple of hundred residents on the island in the summertime. And but the golf course, it looks like an island that was built with a golf course in mind. I mean, the holes and the way he put them on there, is it's like the perfect distances around the shoreline. I think 13 of the 14 have 13 holes out of the 18 touch the shoreline at some
Sure.
point.
Have views of the water.
And the views are just, beautiful, and you get a little breeze, and you get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich at the turn that they make pretty good ones there, and it's just a wonderful place
I
to
can't think of a more special golf memory, really, than taking the boat over there and you dock it on the 17th area. They send you the carts and away you go. I mean, that's a special memory that, I've been blessed to have that opportunity a couple of times, Michael. That is spectacular. So, okay, so Fisher Island would be one of your. What about the two others?
I'm going to say Chicago Golf.
I'd love to play that.
And there's
Haven't
a
played that one.
unique backstory there that it couldn't be more different from as far as the setting from Fisher's Island. It's when you pull up, it looks like a field. I mean, it's Chicago Golf, but it's in Wheaton, Illinois. It's with traffic, it'd take you an hour to get, hour and a half to get out there, from what we think of as downtown Chicago. It's just this field that has been sitting out there, but it is the as much as any place, it can stake a claim to, one of the early birthplaces of golf in the United States. Steve McDonald laid the course out originally. It's a square piece of property with some subtle land movement, but certainly nothing like a Yale or a National Golf Links of America or Fisher's Island, anything like that. It's at first glance, it can look like a field, but there's a lot more to it than that. And it's seen a lot over the years. I mean, it was one of the, early, it hosted, a bunch of USGA, US Amateur, US
Sure.
Opens, very early on. So all the greats have been there. It hosted a Walker Cup recently. It's going to host another Walker Cup in about 15 years. It hosted the first ever women's senior open, first one that when the USGA founded that, whatever that was, 4 years ago now, 5 years
Yeah,
ago.
I love that.
Chicago Golf. And so you feel the real history there. But I also like the connection that when you go, you have to see a letter that's framed and hanging kind of on the downstairs hallway. So McDonald had left Chicago and moved to Manhattan in New York. And they were asking him for some advice because they were starting to feel like, story as old as time, that their course was getting outdated with changes in distance and how good the players were getting, and they were worried they were kind of being left behind. So they asked for McDonald for advice, and he sent them this letter they have hanging in the hallway. My friend John Moran, who's the club historian there, does a great job kind of showcasing their history. And the letter basically says, "Your course stinks. I know I'm the one that built it, but I didn't know what I was doing back then. And so I'm going to send my guy Seth Rayner, and
Wow.
please don't bug him. Let him work for a couple of days, quit pestering him. And I promise you, if you just let him work after, the week's up when he's been there, he'll give you a plan for something that can bring your golf club back to relevance." I just like everything about that. The fact that
That's
it's such a
hysterical.
McDonald thing to say. He complained about everything, including his own work. So, because he knew something was better.
And
And
where is that hanging up? Where in Chicago Golf Club?
it's kind of downstairs and kind of at the bottom of the staircase,
Oh,
the
that's
downstairs
classic. It's worth going
hallway.
just to read that letter, right? Take a picture of that
Or
letter. Oh my
if
gosh.
you can get a copy. So, as I said, John Moran, he wrote an updated club history, not a club history, but a golf course history for Chicago Golf's golf course. And it was the winner of the 2024 USGA's Herbert Warren Wynn Book Prize. So
Nice.
it was the best golf book anybody wrote last year. And John's a deserving recipient of that. So,
Sure. And what would be your number three? You have Fisher Island, you have Chicago Golf Club, and number three, I know
number
it's like
three. So
picking your favorite tournament.
I better say Essex County Country Club because
Oh.
I'm working on a book for them right now.
Oh, okay.
So Essex County is kind of an interesting case study. They wanted two golf courses. So they already had a golf course. They had acquired some land on top of a mountain nearby, and they decided to move the location, like a lot of clubs in kind of the late 1800s, early 1900s. They had outgrown their old place that they had polo and fox hunting and all that. They wanted a new place, and they decided 36 holes. So Tillinghast built the first 18-hole golf course for them, but then they were able to acquire another kind of crucial piece of land that was adjoining, and they decided Tillinghast wasn't available, and so they called up Seth Rayner because, New York, and he's working in the neighborhood. And so Rayner, along with his assistant Charles Banks, they designed 36 holes for him. And I think there's a couple things special about it. One, just the fact that Tillinghast was there, and then Rayner, and then after Rayner's death, Banks completed it. But also, it's the only place where they built two golf courses. And both of them have the template holes and things. Besides his connections to Stephen McDonald, another important introduction for Rayner was the Olmsted brothers. So the Olmsted brothers were, it was a design firm that did architectural landscaping, and they essentially in the United States invented the business of architectural landscaping. They the original Olmsted helped design Central Park. He designed the Capitol grounds in Washington, D.C., around the U.S. Capitol and the Supreme Court and all that. He was involved in real estate, developments and kind of planned communities all over. And Rayner had a great relationship with him. And so whether it was like Fisher's Island, Mountain Lake, all those are Yeoman's Hall, all those are Olmsted sites. And at most of Olmsted sites, they would design 36 holes. And the idea was you'd build the big course first to attract the men who would buy the houses and move their families there. But as they sold more lots and as the neighborhood filled up and the course got busier, they wanted a second golf course. So they would have Rayner design a second course, which would typically be a little bit shorter. And the idea would be, but it would still have, maybe not all 18 template holes, but it would have a, half dozen or whatever. But like I say, a little bit more of a, at least on paper, a little bit more of a dialed down version maybe. And the thought was, is golf became more popular as the neighborhood filled up, that's where you would put the beginners so they wouldn't slow down the experts. And so if you go to Yeoman's Hall, if you go to Fisher's Island, there's a lot of times when you see the routing maps, Fisher's Island, if you can believe it, he routed another golf course. There were supposed to be two golf courses, supposed to be two golf courses at Yeoman's Hall. None of those plans, there's supposed to be two golf courses at Gibson Island. None of those went through. All of them, they got one done and then the Great Depression that's what everything ground to a halt. But the
But
only
what
place
great
where they,
background. And you,
yeah,
as
the,
you mentioned, the Homestead family, we had the opportunity to play Mountain Lake Country Club in Lake Wales earlier in the year. And apparently the Ruth family, they tried to hire Donald Ross to
they
build
did.
that golf course, right? And Donald Ross was not available. So in comes Seth Rayner, and that's a gorgeous design in the
It
middle of
is.
Florida, of all places, right?
And I guess I hope I'm getting this story right. I read it a while back, but so Fisher's Island was just a potato farm for most of his life, and the real estate was kind of considered not a great plot of land because you had to take a boat out to it, and so it was cost prohibitive to do any farming out there. And it wasn't until they saw Mountain Lake kind of in the middle of nowhere they realized, hey, maybe something like this would work, but instead of this community in the middle of central Florida, we could build it on our island and have a church there and have 150 or 200 homes or whatever and a little elementary school and a golf course. And if they can make it work in Florida, and that was kind of, I believe that's I'm getting those, the order of those right. But anyway, yeah, I'd say I just like kind of this at Essex County. It's kind of a unassuming place. It's a place where you can have a cold beer afterwards and feel right at home, even if you're, not from the neighborhood. The other thing I like about, as you mentioned with Long Island, that area around Essex County, Morris County is another real hotbed for Rayner. I mean, you've got Rock Spring, which is one of the few public Rayner courses. I mean, it started as a private club, but it's a municipal course now. So if anybody wants to play a Seth Rayner golf course near New York City and you don't have any connections, that's a place to go. Morris County Country Club, which hosted, it was the first country club in the United States, started and run entirely by women. It held a
What
couple of
great
your
history, too. All
very
these
earliest
courses.
very earliest women's US Opens. And it's got as much history as anybody. That's right down the street. So there's probably six Seth Rayner golf courses within, I don't know, 10 miles of each other right there in New Jersey. So pretty
Busy,
cool to.
busy, busy guy. He did such brilliant work in such a short period of time. Obviously, died so young, 51, back in 1926. My last question to you, Michael, we could go on and on, but looking back on this project, what is one question you would have wanted to ask Seth Rayner if he were alive?
Well, I mean, as you can see from my background with my books, my first question would be, where's the book? Because there's this holy grail, kind of Indiana Jones thing among golf architecture nerds like myself, that it's known that Stephen McDonald took extensive notes when he made his kind of scouting trips over to Scotland and France and England for these courses. And like I say, it was detailed observations of kind of not just, oh, the green slopes back to front, but what's the perfect, slope for a ball to roll, or a well-hit shot to stop, but a poorly struck shot to roll off? Is it 3 degrees of slope? Is it 4 degrees? He was one of the first ones that kind of really tried to, I think, document some of that stuff. And he supposedly had this book. He passed it along to Seth Rayner. It's not known after Rayner died. Charles Banks was kind of, Charles Banks was to Rayner what Rayner was to Stephen McDonald. Nobody knows where the book is. Nobody's seen the book, and there's no photos or really detailed description. So I think my first question would be, where's the book? I think the other one would just be, I just like to listen. I just like to listen and talk. I mean, he was a volunteer firefighter, when he wasn't working in Southampton as the town engineer. He was on the volunteer firefighting crew, and he's just this local boy. And I mean, this is 1915. Southampton wasn't, what it is today, that's for sure. It was, Long Island Expressway hadn't come along. And to go from that to suddenly building golf courses for McDonald's friends all over the country, it was just such a whirlwind. And it was something that he hadn't aspired to. He wasn't a golfer. He'd never played golf in his life. And so I think I'd just like to hear him talk about that 10 years of, did he ever have time to kind of catch his breath and just think, like, what am I getting? Like, how did this all happen?
Right. I'm sure he has no idea or had no idea back then just how prolific and iconic he and his design work would become. No idea. What a genius. What a just a true artist. And it's so wonderful to talk to you, Michael, and to appreciate the genius of Seth Rayner. Thank you so much. Continued success with the book, The Golf Courses of Seth Rayner. I thoroughly enjoyed this. Thanks for spending some time with me on Sports Interview.
Yeah, happy to do it. And we do have a few copies left. So if anybody wants one, we sell them directly on our own website. So it's Back Nine Press, with nine as the number. So BACK, the number nine, and then PRESS. And that way, we don't have to give Amazon their cut and all that stuff. We don't have many left, but we do have a few. So if anybody's dying to have one, we'll try to make sure you can get your hands on one before they're gone. So
Tell me the website one more time.
Back Nine Press, and they've got all kinds of great golf books on there. Jim does it. Jim Sitar, my partner on this project, he's the publisher of Back Nine. So it's Back Nine Press, BACK, the number nine, and then PRESS, and they've got all kinds of goodies on there if you like reading about golf.
Thanks so much, Michael
Thank
Wolff,
you.
the golf courses of Seth Rayner. My thanks to Michael Wolff, to Bag Nine Press, and to Mike Goodsell in production. As the great Bobby Jones once said, golf is the closest game to the game we call life. You get bad breaks from good shots, you get good breaks from bad shots, but you have to play the ball where it lies. I love that quote. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I look forward to talking with you next time, right here on Sports Interview with Anne McGorry.